watch New Survivor. We're stuck in a bad dream. So we're watching an old season with a silly pirate theme. Of course there's a new theme song, but it's as half-assed as our plans. Fence is something, mumbo something, a word that rhymes with plans. John will make some dumb jokes. Andy likes to yell and curse. Something about some backup host. How could hell be any worse? We'll spend the whole time wishing that our lives are back on track. But until then, it's Pirate Survivor. We can all be glad for that. It's the Purple Rock Whatever Podcast, arr, mateys.
Hello and welcome to the Purple Rock Survivor Podcast. I am your host, Andy. With me is my regular co-host, Emma. None of those useless guest hosts this week, which is the main two. We're here to talk about the fourth episode of Survivor Pearl Islands, which I think was actually a pretty significant one. We've been waiting for something new to happen, and it did. Amazing. Amazing that we talked about it last week, and then it just turned around this week.
What a coincidence. It's incredible.
Already there's somebody else in the room making noise, so we might as well just go ahead and introduce him. Onion, how are you doing today?
Superstar of the pod. And Christopher was a sweet new do. For those of you just listening, he's got some red color in the front of his hair, and he's carrying the best guinea pig you ever did see by the name of Onion.
Christopher, what did you think of this week's Survivor? Good. Were you happy when Morgan finally won? Nah, you didn't really care if Morgan won. But was it fun when they picked Rupert as their reward? No? Onion just disagrees?
Onion does not like Rupert. Oh, wait, maybe he does.
Oh, just you wait.
A lot of confusion
just
there.
You wait. Yes, we're thinking now because we were talking about it earlier, weren't we, Christopher?
Yeah.
All right, is there anything you would like to say to the viewers or listeners? Emphasis on listeners at home. Well, I think maybe Onion is whining because he's ready to go to bed, and you probably should be too,
they
right?
They barely sleep.
Well, I mean, they probably also sleep all day, but they're always ready to go back to bed. I share that. All right. You're going to go to bed now? No. Well, you're going to leave now. Good night, bud.
Good night, Christopher. Good night, Onion.
Good night.
Bye. Bye-bye. And wait, hopefully he doesn't drop it. All right, getting back to this episode of Survivor. First easy question is, was this the first significantly strategic episode of the season?
I think so. You know, we talked about some light strategy that's happened before, but this, we had, you know, I mean, there was a swing vote. There was like a real, you know, stuff going on.
Yeah, no, I think the episode obscured the fact that it wasn't quite as swingy as, you know, it made it to be. But yeah, like this is the first time when a vote was dictated by something other than what's going to help us win challenges. In fact, it was very much not about that. It was the polar opposite of that. And that was really important. It kind of strikes me just remembering both this episode and early Survivor, just how thirsty we would be for anything that resembled strategy. It's probably why, you know, I'm a big fan of both Robs, because, you know, they did some new things. Now, I mean, Rob, you know, the first, you know, did some new things in his first season, but I didn't like him because he was a raging asshole. But the one after this is that it's like,
yeah, like, he loved Rob Z, though, you know, the next absolutely. Rob after
that. I guess that would be Rob the second. Rob.
We called as kids, it was, or when I was a kid, my mom it was Boston Rob, Skater Rob, Slimy Rob. Sorry, Rob C.
Fair. Honestly, fair.
Although, even at the time, I secretly was like, I kind of like Slimy Rob. He's got some ideas. Like 12. And I'm like,
But I mean, that's how it turned out. Like, you know, different season we're talking about. In fact, we had a chance to talk about that season. Is at first I didn't quite like him, and then it's like, he's doing stuff. Oh my God, he's doing stuff. And then I bring all of that up is because this episode was like that for me, you know. After just, you know, keep the tribe strong, keep the tribe strong, we see, you know, not only an we're going to get into it, an ill-advised strategic decision to try take control by Burton. But then the flip of it, and he goes home, and it's just like, oh, yeah. Like, it was just so exciting back then when something new would happen, because it so rarely did.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of different strategy, and clearly the result of the episode suggests more. But did the edit of the episode really cover that strategy well?
Yeah, so I think speaking of, watching with someone who hadn't seen before, Mr. Emma was definitely thrown off. Even watching the votes, I think he misread and thought Michelle was the one who flipped, and she'd be like, no, Sean did. And I'm like, and we already saw the preview, said that Sean did, but I've been watching for much longer. So and I think I, as a viewer, as more practiced, was able to piece together. It's like, well, Johnny Fairplay did say, I have this 5-person alliance with Krista, Sandra, Rupert, and Trish. I have a 4-person alliance with Burton, Sean, Michelle. And then what I think is key here, that I have a 1-person alliance with Sean. So I think Johnny Fairplay probably was a swing vote, but once he made his decision, he decided to tell his friend. And we definitely didn't really even, I feel like we didn't see much about him even weighing why he would choose one or another, which I think is really what was missing. But the stuff with Sean looks like it'll be addressed next week in the aftermath, so we can maybe give them a pass on that part.
Yeah, and because there has been so little strategy, and it's not exactly what the show was about back then. In fact, another thing from this rewatch and the other two of the older seasons I've done recently is it's allowed me to kind of fully understand why back then I cared about challenges much more than I do now, because that was the show. What else are you caring about? And we're going to get into some of the other filler. But this is the first time of strategy, so there could be the argument, it would have been nice to really take us into, Fairplay's mind so much as it, could be nice to spend time with Johnny Fairplay. And kind of really understand why there's, frankly, to get more into how he felt about Burton's decision to throw a challenge, because during the challenge, mm-hmm. Fairplay seems very excited by the prospect of throwing the challenge. It seems, intentionally is right up his alley.
It also allows him to be like, oh, yeah, Tijuana didn't beat me,
Yeah. I think that would have been very satisfying. I think it could have led to a satisfying watch of seeing, Burton being hoisted by his own petard as it happens, as opposed to the moment.
Very Drew Christie.
Yeah. But I also can't argue, because I remember what it was like when I watched, 18 years ago now? Or 17, whatever, a very long-ass time ago.
17.
There we go. Math is not my strong suit. Maybe. And also, that 18 will be correct at some point if somebody's listening to this a year from now.
25 years ago.
Is that it was exciting when, suddenly it is revealed that it's Burton. I don't believe, going in, I didn't believe it would be, right? It felt like that mm-hmm. was kind of the faint, but it, frankly, it
yeah, always And I can tell you, our first-time viewer, that's how he felt.
Yeah. And it's, it always felt like Fairplay was going to be on the side of the other, shitty people on his tribe, right?
Mm-hmm.
As far as a reveal, as far as a shock, and thus, a fan moment to get invested in, the roller coaster of emotions I want to go through, it works. Which brings me, to what is a very common modern complaint about Survivor every season. It's, why didn't they show this? Oh, the editors are, messing with us just to, blindside the audience. They don't care about anything but, blindsiding the audience. And people complain about that as though it is a new thing. And, I have argued that I don't know that it is. I've argued that I feel like this is just a built into the fabric of Survivor. And look at what we have here, the 4th episode of the 7th season, and it's exactly what they did. What they did in this episode is the thing that people are complaining about all the time in 2020. Yeah?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And I saw someone get a little annoyed with that, which was kind of funny, because I was like, oh, you sweet summer child. Wait until Jeremy gets voted out in San Juan del Sur. I'm like, what the fuck should happen? I think it's always a balance between blindsiding the audience and showing the strategy. And it's tough. It's a tough, you know, line to walk. And sometimes it benefits the story to really lean into it. Like, I'm, you know, was through Christy earlier. And sometimes, you know, the surprise factor is just so, like, powerful. You kind of get that. I mean, and for all his complaints, I also saw, like, a fist pump when Burton got voted out. So, you know, he's getting emotionally invested.
And look, I get when people are annoyed by it, especially if you're the kind of person.
I've been annoyed by it.
Yeah, I've been sometimes. It's not generally my thing, but absolutely I have. But especially if you're the kind of person who like is often like predicting as it goes and like likes to feel good about being right about these things. What they're often complaining about is that they got tricked. Right. And then in some of their cases, well, I only got tricked because they withheld details. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, that's how it works. Welcome to reality television. Hell, welcome to a lot of mysteries, right?
I was going
to
say, this mystery show tricked me.
Yeah.
What is this red herring?
Yeah, and now, like, I think, you know, a lot of people with storytelling, and this is absolutely fair, would be, like, a good surprise is one that you didn't see coming, but in reverse, you can see that they were telling you that, right? That those pieces were there. And I'll say for this episode, the pieces were there. Like, they did give us the other side saying that they weren't into this. They were saying that, you know, them trying to flip it on it. And then it was just the question of what Fairplay is going to do. And I think actually another reason why originally I didn't think it was going to go down that way is that Rupert wasn't around, right? So maybe once you lose Rupert, it just makes sense that Fairplay is going to stay with the big group. Especially because they hid the Sean detail from us.
Right.
But it's just, you know, I can see it both ways. All I know is when I watched this way back in, you know, 2003, I believe it is, it was really exciting when Burton went home, as you can attest to in 2020. So, why
do
they?
I'll tell you, I don't remember.
It's a fun way to watch television. Sorry?
Oh, I was going to say, because I can tell you, I don't remember how I felt in 2003.
Yeah, this is one of the ones that remember. This is one of the vote outs.
There are bits and pieces of this first season, and obviously it was like long the same amount of time ago for both of us, but not to like belabor that point. You know, there just is a difference between remembering when you were 13 versus
in your
20s-ish.
Well, I was in early 20s. Math. One issue is for quite a while it felt like I was doing my backwards math using 40 as a guidepost.
My backwards math is relatively easy just because I was born on a zero, you know, born in 90. So I can just, like, 2003, add a one. Done.
Okay. But yeah, the reason why I know I found this so satisfying is that back when I'm watching this, the idea of throwing a challenge was so abhorrent to me that, like, the guy who's suggesting it going home as a result was just so satisfying, right? Which I think leads us into the next big discussion for this is that, like, was it a good strategy to throw a challenge? Is it ever a good strategy to throw a challenge?
So,
what do you want to answer first?
To take the first part, well, obviously it was a bad strategy for Burton.
Results forward, really, it's tough for the dark.
But what's interesting is, I mean, obviously he's the one who brought it up first, but after hearing about it, Krista, Sandra, Trish also wanted to throw the challenge. And while it certainly was riskiest for Krista, it obviously worked out for them. But it is very interesting. I'm not sure if we've really seen this before where sort of the whole tribe ends up wanting to throw a challenge and they're like split. And it's like, for one of you, this is a terrible idea. Which is not usually how that goes, even when it does backfire. You know, it wasn't like Kelly Wentworth with throwing the challenge and Sam Shelter. Drew's just really bad at Survivor. But even ignoring that, when Burton is bringing the idea up to Rupert, his like rationale is like, oh, because we have such a lead on Morgan, they're going to know we don't need immunity anymore. Thus, they can get rid of us. So we should lose immunity now. What?
Yeah. It is the worst Like, this, not this existence, but this phylum of challenge-throwing rationale, the worst one, and we've seen it repeated, we see it in, like, Cook Islands is the one.
That was so stupid.
Is, we need to throw this challenge to get rid of somebody who will cause us to lose challenges. Or in this case, you know, the twist is, I need to go to tribal council to prevent them from sending me to tribal council. Like, it's just, no! No, the thing that you're worried about happening, you are creating.
Just wait till you get to the merch, man.
Wait till you get to a swap, you know, like something. Yeah, it's just, you don't need to force the action if the action is what you're worried about. You know, and like, is there ever a good idea for challenges? Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. This show, especially in future seasons, will throw you people to get rid of. And when that happens, when they give you somebody that you weren't previously aligned with and you don't really have much time to become aligned with, it's counterproductive to win. You should be trying to go to tribal council to get rid of them. And, yeah, you know, the first example of this is in Survivor Africa, the very first time they do a swap. They, you know, they hand over Silas and they're like, hey, well, let's get rid of Silas. And that works out. And that's, you know, that happens a lot in Survivor. And yeah, in those
and we've even seen things go bad, and you so often actually in this season in particular talk so often about how people tend to look at risk and no risk and not like what the risk of not taking the risk is. And in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, when the tribe that had most of the healers didn't throw a challenge, they lost Rourke, who had no one, because, and like, they realize later, and they're like, oh, we probably should. Like, if they had thrown the challenge, they probably would have been fine. And instead, they went out, like, da-da-da-da at the merge.
Yeah, one of them might have won the game if the, you know, that move or unmove didn't happen. So, no, absolutely.
And think how differently Winners at War could have been.
Yes. But, yeah, so absolutely, like, something, like, there are many times when it's not only a good idea, it's the best idea, and the failure to do so could hurt your game. But this is not that time, you know? And, you know, again, it's pretty obvious. The guy who proposes it is the guy who goes home. So, yeah, real good thinking there, Burton. And, yeah, just his logic of, and, like, I understand on some level, like, his concern. Burton is exactly the kind of person who is about to be in danger in, like, three votes. If there's a swap, maybe earlier. Although, even back then, I feel like in non-Silas situations, they would often have kept somebody like him just to help.
Right, because we need to win challenge.
Yeah, and this is a season when, like, winning challenges is pretty important, because when you lose one, somebody comes over and takes your shit, right? So, you know, and like, I don't think it was in anybody's mind.
Tragically, have no more shit to give.
Yes. But I don't think it was in anybody's mind that, like, oh, we got to get rid of him soon. I think if they had lost, yeah, it's probably Michelle going, right? As a way of weakening them, but, you know, still keeping what had, you know, been the core of people who were tired of, you know, Burton, Sean, and Michelle's crap.
Right, the classic of, like, we don't like these men, so we're going to vote out the woman that they're close to.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, tale as old as time, right? Now, I mean, this is, you know, three seasons past Marquesa, so it's not impossible that the strong dude gets voted out early, but I believe there's probably, off the top of my mind, you know, there aren't that many examples. There's Silas, as I'm mentioning, but that's a very, yeah, that's a swap situation, and also, a colossal asshole.
And I think too, getting rid of Silas isn't just like, it's sort of the same thing we were talking about. It's not just to get rid of Silas, it's to protect Lex and Tom.
Yes,
and absolutely. Kelly, but mostly Lex and Tom.
And I keep bringing it up because, well, for one, it's an early example, but the other thing is, it was unusual for this episode in that they detailed as much of the challenge throw and the process behind it. And it seems to be within Survivor, if they're showing you people talking about throwing a challenge and, you know, strategizing about throwing a challenge, it's probably a bad idea. You know, the show generally does not like to advertise the fact that it can be a good idea. Africa is an exception. They actually do show them talk about, you know, whether or not they should throw the challenge. And I think the reason why is because it was the very first time such a thing had happened. And it was a good idea. I mean, frankly, one of the people involved in that discussion is the winner of that season. So, you know, usually though, and this episode is no exception, if they're showing you somebody talking about throwing a challenge, that episode or that season is probably not going to go well for that person.
Yeah, even when throwing the challenge actually is a good idea.
Yeah.
But then maybe you don't pull it off the next episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like, I get it. I understand why the show, like, would clown like a Jamie, even though she was doing the absolute right thing, is because for the same reason why gambling is a greater sin in baseball than is drug use. Because you don't want to create the impression in people's minds that these contests are a waste of time, that these contests are not being played to win. And that's why gambling is a problem, because it creates the idea, well, are they trying to win or are they trying to win their bet? Whereas, you know, drug use, they're trying to win so hard, you know, right? And again, you know, and it's the same thing for Survivor. These challenges are a huge part of the episode, you know. They take up, you know, when they have to, it generally about a third of an episode. And you don't want audiences being like, yeah, but who cares? Which I think is actually probably a Big Brother probably phenomenon, but what the hell do I know?
No one here would ever know.
Basically, I'm thinking that because I watched some of one season, and there was a guy who was awesome who intentionally never won a challenge, and he won that season.
Is that Dr. Will?
Dr. Will, yeah.
I've heard tell of him.
Yes, maybe from me. And again, the second season of that show. Otherwise, yeah, I'm good. Anything else on challenge throwing? I believe you've probably written a blog on it in the past.
I have. What I'm not sure is if I remembered to include this one, and I'm sure people in the comments were like, what about Pearl Island? But yeah, if you want to like Google, or I guess I could maybe post a link when we post this online. I know somewhere out there is a like, I believe I graded, you know, the throne challenges, whether they are a good idea or a bad idea. It's going to be out of date because seasons have happened since then. And a lot of the good challenges, the good instances, we don't really know until after the fact, such as I believe Dominic said in Ghost Island said he threw the challenge to get rid of Bradley, which I guess did technically sort of work out for him, although I'm not sure if it was really that necessary.
Just so it's clear, we're not spoiling Pearl Islands, but fuck it, we're going to spoil other seasons because they should mean nothing to you contextually. I think it worked out. I think it worked out because in Ghost Island, the show just kept making things work out for that tribe. But that was also a season where they were often way more focused on the dangers from within than those from without. It just never mattered because they just kept getting handed people from without. Like, this is one of the worst, because I don't think Burton was in any danger. Like, Drew Christie, you know, I mean, it's the funniest, and, you know, it's one of the worst. But I think
actually probably the one that inspired me to write it, yeah. I bet. So it's probably not even on the list, which is devastating.
But I feel like he was somebody who probably would have been in danger whenever that tribe had gone to tribal council, whether he had, you know...
Because he's such an idiot.
Yeah. Like, and I don't think he had any allies, whereas Burton had allies, and it's like at a time in the place of the show where they just would have kept him because they were winning because of the overwhelming physical advantage, which we discussed last week, right? But it wasn't until he brings up this idea that people were sort of turned off by him. It was like, oh, that's what you want to do? Sure. And yeah, it is really interesting, as you mentioned, and maybe it's the big tell of how it was going to go. That the other tribe, the other part of it was like, yeah, let's do it. Like, you'd think that, like, you know, Chris or Sandra would be like, but they were like, awesome, this is our chance to get rid of him instead. And maybe, you know, they probably had a good idea that that was a realistic possibility and not just hoping on Johnny Fairplay. Because, you know, there's some people from Micronesia could tell you that hoping for Johnny Fairplay is the best idea.
Although in fairness, they didn't think Rupert was going to be taken away from them, so they would have had the votes. Or it would have been tied, at least.
Being
a tie, they would have gotten Johnny Fairplay. Anyway, math hard. Brad is so upset with us right now.
Yeah, well, what would have been the tie, I wonder, in that scenario? I mean, just revote probably would have taken care of it. It's weird, actually. I believe Sean brings up past votes. It's like, that's not the thing anymore, my dude.
Well, I thought that I was kind of making fun of it at first, but I think what he's saying is, because he's like, oh, they'll vote for... He's like, past votes I think he's saying, like, pass vote. There aren't any pass votes, so I don't care. Like, I think he says it wrong, but I think what he means is, like, pass votes isn't, like, the thing. So if they vote for one of us and have they have fewer, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Which is a, you know, decent attitude to have about it. But, yeah, I think it would have had to be the Rock, because that had happened, even though it was in the incorrect way. Right, and we just didn't see a tie again until Blood versus Water.
Right, yeah. Yeah, actually, that's a fair interpretation. I you know, as the way he said it, I was like, there are no pass votes, as in this tribe has not gone to tribal council, and thus there are no pass votes. But yes,
yeah, I mean, that's what I thought when I first heard it, and then I was like, wait, like, let me, you know, and thought about it differently. But
yeah, absolutely. Purple Rock would have been the tiebreaker after, you know, revote, which I'm sure somebody would have flipped.
Yeah, through. I don't see Fair Play staying strong, obviously, because... We see how he went. Like, Sean probably flips, you know, based on what we saw happen. So.
And actually, that's probably more likely than somebody from the other side flipping.
Yeah. I think they stay put. Well, right. Maybe not the same, but I don't know.
In part because, you know, Fair Play and Sean know they have options in, you know, the other way, whereas if that side loses, they're just the next to go. All right, so yeah, that's kind of the exciting part of the episode, but I mean, there was another big event this episode that has been building for like two episodes now. What an amazing use of time that treasure chest was, huh?
What they spent, like, that's the crazy thing is, you know, this isn't a show that films live. They know what the payoff is, and they still spent so much time on it. Like, honestly, I think if this was a modern season, we would have not known the treasure chest existed. It would have been like, what was it? Wasn't there some season where they gave them the option to mutiny and no one did it, so they just didn't show it?
Yeah, that's happened. I can't think of the season, but yes, it's happened.
Yeah, because we didn't see it, so it doesn't stick in minds, obviously. But yeah, it would have been that. It would have, or they would have done it, and they'd been like, oh, it's moldy? Like, oh, sorry, guys, let's just replace this shit.
Yeah, the mold part is the biggest thing. Like what amateur-ass bullshit that, for one, they put things in that can mold. They don't recognize, you know, how preservation...
That's going to take, like, a week
at least. That they kept it. Yeah, absolutely. If they would have been like, oh, we're open, it's like, all right, cut, bring in the new stuff. We're reshooting this. We're not giving you people a bunch of mold.
Like, it's, and they spent, and like, it's so crazy to me that they spent all that build up to show how they messed up. Because this is a production failure. This is not Drake's failure. You know, the treasure, like, it's not even really like Idle Clues ended up being. It kind of is the thing where you really needed all three parts to find it.
Yeah.
They got it in the least amount of time you could. And like, they still did all this, but I'm like, oh, what a, you know, it's like, that's because of you.
Yeah, it's like, ah, you guys suck, you left it there for 9 days, and yeah, absolutely, like, the earlier clues, just like, you know, nothing, until you know to look for, because it's buried.
If it's buried, you have to know where it's buried.
And you'd have to know to look for that tree and then go in several directions, you know, 15 paces. So, yeah, there's no way.
Nowadays, they would at least maybe know that's a weird tree. Something might go on there. But yeah, they wouldn't know to walk 15 paces and then dig.
Right. Well, even nowadays, I don't think they would have ever gone to that tree, because I believe this is, like, farther away from camp than, like, in modern Survivor, you tend to, you know, move about, unless maybe you're Tony. Speaking of, like, what do you think was spent more time on, like, collectively, the search for this treasure, which was a segment every episode since it was introduced, or, like, Tony finding the Tyler Perry idol? Like, I feel like as much as, you know, yeah, like, as much people complain rightly about how so much of Modern Survivor is, like, all these hunts, it's like, this was a significant storyline for a bunch of moldy bullshit, you know? And, like, there were some other things. Like, you know, as much as it sucks that the mosquito nets, like, smell moldy, that's awesome that you have them, right?
Saying, like, I was like, you could probably wash those in the ocean to, like, let them air out, like, the blankets and the nets and stuff. Like, yeah. I would think, but I'm, you know, I'm no mold expert.
That's right. Like, you know, I think another reason why Modern Survivor would do that is like, hey, we almost lost a season due to staph infection, so let's get this mold up out of here. But yeah, no, it's just so laughable, and it just kind of shows you, and not even like as a point of criticism, that the show had to get better at what it did. And maybe as a bit of a remark of, you know, the people who, you know, love the good old days, and there's absolute good reasons for it. But, like, the show has gotten to be a much more professional operation. Maybe some people mourn that fact that it's too professional, but that we wasted, I don't know, like, probably at least good 20 minutes total, maybe 15. I mean, they felt like forever because it was always going nowhere.
This week especially, though, like, I feel like them actually finding, like, was so much time. Like,
yeah, and then show for that like, payoff, right?
So we can see Sean be like, oh, we found it because we really need to pump up Sean.
Yeah. And then, yeah, and all of that for this payoff. And then, like, I don't feel like we ever really get them to be like, hey, our life is so much better now that we found this treasure chest.
You say, even if it was a good treasure chest, it's still not interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and like, all of the things that, like, you could imagine it could be, even just jokingly, like, here's the shoes you guys sold or something. It's not, it's just some supplies. It's like what a reward after a challenge would be. Like, it's not as good as the reward they won. It's not as good as the sewing machine, which is such a fun, like, you know, thing. Like, obviously, like, it has to be an audible when they're like, oh, God, we're throwing these people out there with no clothes, and they're tearing apart jeans, and, you know, Rupert's wearing a skirt, and Austin has no clothes.
They turned, I didn't remember this from when I watched this season before, but they turned, like, some part of jeans into a tube top for Michelle, which is actually very creative, but probably so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think she's still wearing a buff underneath it, which makes sense.
So it's like, okay, well, like, it feels like something, like, they called an audible. Like, we gotta find a way to improve that without ruining our aesthetics. Maybe hoping that they can get Austin some clothes.
Nope. Yeah,
for no other reason, like, put a stitch into your underwear so it cinches up a bit. And instead, you know, there's this. But yeah, if it feels like we've gone long on this segment, it's just, it blows my mind.
The show.
Yeah, like, which was a bigger waste of time? This or the Medallion of Power?
Oh, God.
Probably still the Medallion of Power, but...
The Medallion of Power is what I think made me first embarrassed to be a survivor. Because that was, like, my freshman year of college, and, like, watching it with, like, my roommate, who also, even though she was also a film student, was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if we need a TV at our dorm. And I was like, I have a TV. I'll bring it. And then I'm, like, watching Survivor. They're talking about, like, the Medallion of Power. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, no, and just bravo, and like, you know, it's just, I'm glad they've never done it again. It was moldy. All right, so the other thing we get, or another thing we get, is from this episode, kind of related to the actual reward, not like the Ferrero Rochers and mold they got, was more development of Rupert. As I mean, I think they're really putting the thumb on the scale of the fan favorite. And, like, two, you know, after episode two, I saw, you know, from my modern perception of him, like, yeah, being a little extra with Sean and being possessive. And, like, if you're really looking with the trained eye, like, even this episode when it was like, well, we'll never lose a challenge because I'm in it, it's like, oh, that's the cocky Rupert we know. But same time, like,
also,
I understand.
Also, is he wrong?
What's that?
I said, but also, is he wrong?
Not this
season. We'll see.
Yeah, but, so far, right?
Plus, I think also what he was saying was that he's not, he will try.
Yes.
Which is absolutely true in what he's like.
But yeah, at the same time, it's like, how do you not love this guy? You know, like, it's just such an easy dichotomy of him being comfortable with what's going on, getting along with some of the other sympathetic characters, not being fussed about the making a skirt or whatever. Just
secure in his masculinity.
Yeah. While these douchebags keep making fun of him. Like, it's just such easy. So, like, if anybody's ever, like, wondered, like, I don't understand the appeal of Rupert because, you know, at this point, it's not that much of a spoiler to tell people he comes back for future seasons, especially if you know Modern Survivor. Coming back isn't necessarily a sign of, like, great success. There will be people coming back from this season that don't make, you know, the finals, right? So, yes, he has come back before. But, you know, that doesn't tell you how well he does at this season.
It really doesn't.
I don't understand the appeal of Rupert. Like, you watch this episode, it's obvious. Like, I don't know how you wouldn't, unless you're just, like, a jaded person. Like, he's just, it's so sympathetic.
I mean, you have the guy, like, I also love how, like, Sean and Burton are basically, like, Ha ha, your clothes are falling apart in the jungle.
Yeah, I know.
Like, ooh, got him.
It's like, hey, buddy, you wearing the skirts? Like, you guys wore suits. Like, yeah, none of you have proper clothes. I'm guessing, you know, from their perspective and why they can take that snotty tone, other than the fact that they're just the kind of people who probably have always made themselves feel better by making somebody else feel small, is that they get to wear underwear and look good. And Rupert doesn't. But yeah, I mean, do you kind of agree that assessment that, like, you know, it's pretty easy to see from this episode why Rupert was so beloved?
Yeah, it was also funny seeing, you know, I think whether, you know, not even taking this season in consideration, but just how people think of Rupert and how they think of him playing the game. It was interesting seeing him actually be like a little bit sneaky, you know, as much as he's like, I would never throw a challenge. When Burton asks him, he's like, yeah, sounds like a plan. And then is like immediately tells Sandra and Krista, just like, okay, so we should, you know, we should do this.
Yeah,
and like he, you know, he stole the shoes. He's lying to Burton. Like, we're seeing all that stuff happen.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the very first time that, you know, he's even had to approach anything about, like, higher level of gameplay. You know, he's done things like reason why he wants to be the provider and that'll help him stick around. But this is the first time that there's a hint that they might go. And then indeed, of course, they, not him, go. And yeah, he's playing the game. You know, he doesn't do the dumb thing. It's like, I can't tell a lie or anything like that. So, and I think another reason why, you know, he's so appealing in this, besides, you know, just the, you know, bully dynamic and all of that, is he is opposed to the idea of throwing a challenge. You know, again, he'll go along with it, for one, to protect himself in the tradition of, you know, if somebody proposes something, you say yes. But back then, again, as I was saying, the idea of throwing a challenge is just so aberrant. It's against the spirit of competition. Even though, you know, again, I was on board even then when they do it in Africa. I was probably like, oh, he shouldn't intentionally lose, but Yeah, I mean, I wanted to go. This is before, of course, anybody knew truly how bad Silas was as a human. But yeah, so like he gets to be that figure for the audience as well, saying that, yeah, this is not good, because we're like, yes, that's not good. Now, of course, he has to stick to theme as he's doing it. If this were real pirates, you'd be the first to die.
I cracked up at that.
Yeah. And another thing to note, this is only the first time that Rupert will be a reward in the Survivor. All right, it's time for our weekly feature. One of two, but the Survivor-related one. Everyone's favorite game. Did Austin suck this week?
Okay, I know last week at a controversial, like, tepid, maybe not, but then we ultimately concluded it's just that comparatively he did not suck as much. But keep in mind, we barely saw Austin this week. I'm gonna try again. I'm gonna say I don't think he sucked.
I'll say this one is tough, in part because the way Austin sucked this week is an understandable way, and a way that I have railed against in the past, and I guess I'm going to do that now because I love nothing more than repeating my hobby horse takes. And that is because he couldn't swim in the challenge, right? And I am not...
I did forget that happened. I was so focused. Again, I keep forgetting about the reward challenges. I was very focused on how obviously he's going to beat everyone, but I was just delighted by when he faced Michelle and he was like, well, I don't want to like tackle this small girl, and just grabbed her hands and swung her. Like, that's such a like careful way of like, obviously I'm much stronger than you, but I'm not gonna hurt you. Just toss, and that cracked me up. But yeah, I'll let you
continue. Well, it was good about the immunity challenges. I don't care if any of those people were trying or not. Austin was winning it in the matchup, right?
Yeah.
Especially because they sat you know, Rupert and but yeah, so how he sucked is that he couldn't swim. And I am not going to fault him for that in the way that I'm never going to be that guy who's like, how do you go on Survivor and not learn how to swim? Now, I've done this before. I've used coded language in the hopes that some people would figure out how it's a classist way of judging people that don't know how to swim. I'm going to move away from the coded language. It is a racist way of thinking often, and why you don't understand why so many people on Survivor who can't swim seem to be, not all of them, For one, not every black person who's on Survivor can't swim, nor is everybody who can't swim on Survivor black. There seems to be a lot of them, and you'd think people might piece this together, that being able to learn how to swim when you're a child growing up and learning this skill is often a privilege of how you grew up and the environment in which you find yourself. Often related to, you know, and I don't know Austin's background specifically.
He sounds like he's from Boston, but that's not
that. Often it's a result of money and such. So, you know, because I'm not going to criticize the man that, you know, the way his life grew up didn't lead him to getting swimming lessons the same way mine did.
Or having parents who were even, you know, allowed in pools when they were children.
That's right. Very much that. So if you've never understood in the past, maybe a light bulb can go on why you're like, oh, I can't relate to that because in my life, swimming lessons were just a fact of life. That's not always the way it is. And maybe that's not the way it was for Austin. So he doesn't suck because he couldn't swim.
Also,
he sucks because he chose to swim. Why was he out in water in a challenge that gave you the option? Like, as soon as they're calling out the strategy of there are some puzzle pieces buried in the ocean and there are some puzzle pieces buried in the beach, I'm like, oh, great. Now Austin doesn't have to go out there because they already introduced the fact that he couldn't swim in the first episode, right? So I'm like, perfect. He can go out as far as the beach as possible, dig out those fossil pieces and get back and leave the ocean part to the swimmers. But nah, dude decides to go out to get the puzzle pieces, not even the closest water puzzle pieces. And he doesn't like put the goggles over his eyes. They're more useful, these things that protect your eyes when they're over your eyes than when they're up here. It's like baseball players who have the sunglasses up here. Although sometimes at least the sun is shifting. The water is going to be wet no matter what time you go under it. And like I almost wonder, like, some of that is people tell you you're not supposed to dive with the mask on. But that's like from a height. That's not from here. When you're already in the water and you're just putting your head in, the goggles should be down. But also, don't
goggles,
do that.
Goggles, they do nothing.
Yes. So that's kind of where, like, you know, this probably was his least sucky episode, but why were you...
I forget about the reward challenge every time.
Yes.
Like, well, Austin did good on immunity, so he didn't suck.
And
that's my bit.
The other thing, like, I'm going to let him a bit off the hook, is he wasn't the only one making stupid decisions like this. Why was Savage taking stuff out of the beach when he apparently can swim because he went out there to rescue Austin?
When he's apparently strong enough to be a lifeguard. Not as strong as Rhino, who went out first. Savage is like, I better do it too.
Rhino might be better at the water part than you. I get that Tawana might be better. But you're in the upper half, so get your ass in the ocean.
Yeah.
And keep
Rhino's from Los Gatos. Ryan grew up learning how to swim.
Yeah.
Los Gatos is fancy.
Well, I mean, Savage is from California. That fucker knows how to swim in an ocean.
He lives there now. At this time, he's credited as being from Chicago. I don't know where he grew up. But Los Gatos is like over the hill from where I grew up. So I was in the beach community, Los Gatos is fancy. It's like the ritziest part of, well, no, there's a lot. But like, you know, if you don't want to live in like San Jose, but you still want to live in Silicon Valley. And like you, yeah. Anyway, that's too much about Northern California socioeconomic dynamics. But I do also want to say a light defense of Austin. I think just based on what we've seen, he can swim. He's just not a good swimmer. He's not a strong swimmer. So he may be overestimated a bit. And also open, and we've brought this up too, when people talk about, well, why wouldn't you learn to swim before you got Survivor? Swimming in open water versus a pool is very, very different. And open water can change on a, you know, we've seen that. I mean, we've seen that this summer, unfortunately, but like that, you know, in open water, like even if you know how to swim, things can happen and suddenly it's dangerous.
Yeah.
So.
And like that distinction that he can, but he's not good at it. That's what you get when you learn to swim before you go on Survivor, as opposed to having learned to swim as you grow up. Like it's not a skill that you can acquire within a few weeks, which, you know, most people should know is about the time you have when you're cast on Survivor. Some people have it.
Also, I did learn how to swim as a child, and I'm still not a very good swimmer.
Yeah, but yeah, people have it in their mind that, like, you have months and stuff. It's like, when you get the call, it's often a couple of weeks, in part because they don't want to stretch that out from, like, bringing you to Los Angeles for, you know, these final round of casting and then bringing you back. You know, some people, you know, you'll hear it takes years. Those people don't know they're going to be on Survivor several years later. They were just in the rounds of casting. Many people are contacted at different times. It doesn't mean they're about to be on Survivor. Many of them are never on Survivor. Hell, some of them are like, are you available tomorrow? So we don't even know, like, how much time Austin had. But, like, you know, being like, I can swim a bit is, that's when you've learned a bit. Like, you've learned recently. Being a good swimmer who can get out in the ocean, dive down and grab something, that tends to take a little bit more time. And that, again, gets into, you know, how did you not learn how to swim? It's like how there's Canadians like, how do you not know how to skate? Well, because it's not like, it's something you have to learn. And if you have no reason to learn it, then you don't. Now, swimming obviously is a skill that can save your life in a way that skating very much is not. But another way you can save your life is not going in any water, which is a cultural thing that a lot of people have. So again, like, it's like, I didn't need to learn to swim because I didn't live anywhere near an ocean and never went to the pool. Pretty simple. So yeah, in the weekly feature, still, I don't have Austin above the non-suck line, but, you know, like in the graph, I'd see he's close. You know, I'm cutting him a lot of breaks, but, and plus, especially because it's like, was this another, like, Andrew Savage, you know, push him into the water and let him learn how to swim, like it was when he sent out Ryan, it's hard to say. All right. Another thing that really caught my eye and I thought would be fun to discuss is Tribal Council ago, and Fair Play is just wasted. Admittedly so. Could you feel the seething disgust from Probst?
Yes. Was,
oh my,
like,
God.
I said that, and I was like, Probst hates him. And, like, I knew that Probst hates him now, and I know that he hated him post-Micronesia. I don't think I knew that he already hated him.
Yeah, it
hates him so much.
It's so palpable. Like, you could tell, like, he just wants to shut that fucking pissant up. Like, it's just like, yeah, like, when he asks, like, are you, was it Wasted, I think it was?
Loaded,
there it is.
It's like, okay.
Which I had to explain, actually, to, you know, my kids what that meant. Oh, God, he is so angry. And then when, like, you know, Fair Play's doing his bullshit.
Way to talk about the people here.
Yeah, when he's doing his bullshit about zodiac signs, like, you could almost see the vein throbbing in Probst's head, especially because, like, this era Probst is very much about, like, you know, the mystique of the show and all. Like, this is not, you know, the Probst that has been worn down by several seasons of, like, returnees calling him on his shit. This is like, yeah, you should respect this whole process, and this guy clearly doesn't.
You even had, he started off with, like, okay, John, you're self-proclaimed strategist. Like, he was just not having it.
Yeah, and I love to see, you know, Old Testament Probst on that one. It was and, like, you know, it does also kind of show, like, the strengths and, like, of Probst and, like, the job he's there to do. And, frankly, a job that he wasn't doing in the early seasons is he once again called them on their bullshit excuse for, you know, the participants in the challenge. And, look, they gave their answers, and who knows how long he let that go. But you absolutely have to ask that question. You have to challenge them. And, you know, if they can bullshit you, then great. Then they've passed your Minotaur test or whatever. But yeah, no, it was wonderful because, you know, I also hate Johnny Fairplay, so.
Yeah, Mr. Emma, I really hate him too. Like, when, you know, the episode starts, I'm like, okay, so what do you think, that, you know, who do you want? Like, well, I hope, he's like, who's that curly-haired one again? Like, I hope it's him. And then you see the, like, it's really great seeing, like, a new person really just fall for the edits, because then you have, like, the segment with Rupert and, like, Burton and Sean being jerks, you know, Trish being like, they've really alienated everyone. He's like, well, now I want one of those guys to go home. I'm like, of course you do.
Yes. I meant to look up how old Fair Play was at this time, but he was old enough to not be doing wrestling impressions every fucking episode. And I get, obviously, that he was into it. Like, the whole Johnny Fairplay thing is his attempt to create a wrestling persona. But, like, every time he gets some liquor in him, suddenly he's just, woo! and doing all this. And it's like when I was in college, my friends and I would do it in part because we were all wrestling fans. We knew that we were doing wrestling thing at that time, and we were dumbass college students. I don't know if anybody else is out there being like, it's time for Ric Flair, give us that. Or like, how do you not have the decency or the self-consciousness? Like, we are people who know to not discuss our fandom of this very show in mixed company. I would not, even at that, like, even in college when, like, you know, more people my age or bros my age were into wrestling than not, I wouldn't be the first person to bring it up in a group of strangers. And yeah, we saw it in the first episode when he's getting loaded. We saw it then, and obviously, yeah, when he's doing all this. Oh, what a dumb fucker.
Oh, man.
All right. Up dog time. People love it.
It's the segment people are clamoring for.
It does lead to the most comments, and hopefully this week the same. When we're done.
That's true. Guys, you can talk about the show, too.
That's right. Thought we'd do a really quick one here. We are recording this on Thursday night. There are other things happening on television Thursday night. And we thought it would be important to ask, what's the worst thing? Not what would you rather, but the worst thing that you would watch instead of a Trump town hall?
You want me to start?
You
want me to go? Okay, Fast and Furious franchise.
An episode of Big Brother.
The Dodgers win a playoff game.
All of Survivor Nicaragua.
The Bachelor.
A new season of Dexter.
50 Shades of Grey.
An interview with J.K. Rowling.
Matt and Andy talk about Die Hard for 2 hours.
A Mike Pence town hall, in fact.
The last season of Glee.
Mel Gibson hunting Santa Claus.
Mel Gibson is Santa Claus.
Is he? Either one.
That's also my answer. You would rather watch Mel Gibson hunting Santa Claus.
There you go.
I would rather watch Mel Gibson
in Santa Claus. How about my own parents divorcing? I would rather watch.
Which oh, I already watched that, baby.
Oh, yeah.
The second season of Pen 15 ended on a fun note for me. No, it's fine. My parents were actually very amicable. I had it pretty easy. Not as easy as my brother, who got to be in college when they split up, and I got to be 12.
Actually, I didn't write this down, but I could also think of another thing I'd rather watch my parents doing than watch. Actually, maybe that is right.
You
right
mean
there.
Getting back together. I actually I had to improvise the Santa thing because I had Big Brother on mine too. I had a feeling that was going to be the one we overlapped. But
Here's another one. How about The Apprentice? Like even that, you know, just because which is
I don't know. The real problem is hearing him speak.
Yeah, I've never watched that show, but like you know, if you see clips even like from 2016, like he's more tolerable. Like a 2016 Trump town hall, I'd almost rather watch than a 2021 because that man is fucking gone, as well as being the worst human in the world possibly ever. I mean, that's a strong statement. Obviously, there has been, you know, but I'm still willing to argue it.
Right. It's like, he maybe doesn't have, like, the drive and ability to accomplish the atrocities that others before him
yes.
have. I'm sure
but,
he would
you know,
love
I was
going to
be like, yeah, he doesn't have, you know, I get that there's been, you know, mass murders and all that. And then I remembered some recent statistics and I'd be like, So anyway, that's our list so far. If you have anything else, feel free to add it if you, you know, want to explain it or not. Although, as you know, we you know, demonstrated, they tend to be self-explanatory. And if you wanted to do that, you could comment where?
www.purplerockpodcast.com. Our Twitter is @PurpleRockPod. Andy is @PurpleRockAndy. And I, of course, am @PurpleRockEmma. Why do I lean into the mic and put on a fake voice for this part? I don't know.
It's all your radio training. All right.
My dad does do radio.
Various podcatchers, YouTube, etc. All right. That ends the Pearl Islands spoiler-free section of the podcast.
Spoiler time. It's spoiler time.
And now, if you still want to not know what happens the rest of the season, because we are going to spoil.
You have 3 more seconds, and now it's spoiler time.
Now, so as it opened the episode, at least in the non, guinea pig section of it, this was like the first really strategic episode of the season. It's the first time that Drake goes to tribal council. Were you surprised that Sandra is barely in this thing?
Really, because I think it's important to remember that when Sandra won, she was really seen as like a major under-the-radar winner.
Yeah, and like this episode started to like remind me of why. Because I think in the earlier episodes, we're like, she's not under the radar, right? Like in the first episode, she was the MVP. Even, you know, I believe last week or the week before, we were like, she might be the MVP of Drake because they're winning as a result of, you know, what she was able to do that first episode. But also that, you know, she was a presence. You know, just last week, she's yelling
at Johnny. She can get loud too. What the fuck?
I can't think of anything she really did here other than, you know, the challenge.
No, it was a very big Krista episode.
Yeah, which I mean, again, it makes
sense. Who is now Mr. Emma's favorite on the season.
Interesting.
Okay. Sure.
Sure, I mean.
What, is she funny?
She's not
unlikable. Be funnier than me.
She's not unlikable, but, you know, I feel like the type to really be moved by what she's delivered so far.
Which is not his tip, but conveniently, as someone with a very wide type, conveniently, every time there's like a celebrity interview, it's like pale, brown hair, bangs, skinny. I'm like, all right,
well, I understand, but also get off my corner. But yeah, so she has been pretty present in the first three. And now this is one where decisions are being made. Things are being out there. Like, it's easy to envision a world where Sandra is cussing out the stupidity of what's going on. And we didn't get any of that. And, you know, obviously it's understandable that Krista gets more featured because she was
She's in danger.
Right? But it is surprising that, like, we got nothing out of Sandra. Because, like, I don't feel like that would happen nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we would at least hear a little more about her opinion about threatening the challenge. That's ideally her not wanting to throw it, you know, or something. Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Other than that, I don't really feel like there's a lot of spoiler stuff.
Yeah, my main thing, honestly, is that even though this is kind of the episode that finally starts to take a little more strategic turn, I still, as you know, so we've seen it before and watched it, you know, maybe a few years ago, 7-ish years ago, found myself kind of thinking, like, when do we get to the fireworks factory? And, like, really, like, wait, Burton's going down. I was like, God, we still have Michelle and Sean and Trish to get rid of before we even get to the outcasts.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just like waiting for how long until we can get to the grandma? Like, especially watching someone watch us. Like, I just want to get to the cool stuff.
Yeah. And like, this was cool, right? Like, Burton's come up and is cool. Obviously, it will get undermined by the fact that he reappears. But, you know,
what
like,
are you gonna
it,
do? At the same time,
it's like, okay, well, that was something. And that's just, like, that's the thing you have to get used to. And, again, there's other people who rewatch Survivor all the time. Like, yeah, none of the things I'm saying aren't revelatory for them, but I'm not somebody who watches Survivor a lot, rewatches it. It's just, like, in these earlier seasons, especially in the earlier episodes, there might be a thing. You know, like, there's not going to be stuff all the time. And, again, that's not always bad, you know. It's, frankly, often our preference that, you know, they're not going crazy strategy all the time at the beginning because it tends to lead to a flatter field at the end.
And how.
Yeah. But, yeah, this is, like, still, like, hopefully stuff happens soon. One thing to point out is that, because I was watching for it this time, you know, so from a future perspective, knowing what's happening, noticing it this time, man, Morgan was so into winning. Like, it didn't seem from their reaction, and of course they should be excited to win, but it really felt like they thought this was, and no, not even really felt, it's clear that they feel this is an honest competition that they are winning. Like, this is it. We're finally turning it around. Like, they were pumped about every matchup they win. And probably like, oh my God, we're finally doing it. And it's like, it feels obvious what's going on. Like, and obviously we have the benefit of 1,000% hindsight and foresight. We are told that that's what they're doing. We know that that's what they were doing because, you know, and we know the result. But, like, they don't even seem to be like, when, like, you know, the fact that Burton and Rupert aren't out there. They're just like, God bless. God bless them. They are so excited that, like, we're finally doing this. We're coming together. Everything's looking Drake. And that will set up a future moment.
What? Yes, I can't wait for that. I mean, you don't have to hide it. We're in the spoiler section.
Yeah, I just thought I'd leave.
I also, and this kind of relates to a future moment too, is I for a second found myself surprised that Dara beat Krista, even though Dara does win a lot of challenges, but and then I was like, oh yeah, duh, they're throwing it. Because, you know, we'll see, Krista like fucking holds her own when they do that weight challenge. Because
yep.
I keep waiting for that too, because I'm like, you know, I was like, that's when Savage really starts to come out. Although, yep. Did you notice, because I like made a point to like point it out because I'm such a dork, but was like, I think it was during the reward challenge, but maybe Probst finally called him Savage.
Oh, I didn't know.
Which means we can finally call him Savage. Yeah. Like, so I made a point to point that because I was just like, I hadn't even, like, I try to still say John and not Johnny Fairplay just because it hasn't caught on yet. And I'm saying Andrew instead of Savage just so it's like not like obvious that this is going to be a thing. And so I was like, hey, this just, you know. Probst's very rare and exciting last name mentioning, like, he did not notice, but then I was like, just kind of was like, well, his last name's Savage, and if your last name's Savage, people are going to call you Savage, and he's like, yeah.
It's yeah, honestly, I get offended sometimes when people don't use their much cooler last name in the show, to the point where, like, in the preseason of Ghost Island, I decreed that we would never call him Chris. He would always have to be Chris Noble.
I still call him Chris Noble.
Yeah, no, you're only hurting yourself if you don't. And luckily, the show agreed. Like, everybody else does as well. And it's like, this is even before...
The two-name is even better than the... Like, because there's, like, first-name basis, last-name basis, but full-name basis. It's like Chris Noble and Rick Devins.
Yeah.
I know people try to do Devins, but I resisted. We didn't hate him the way people decided that he was evil for some reason, but I also don't think he should be Devins.
No.
So he's Rick Devins. Rick Devins, Chris Noble.
Yeah, I agree.
Natural comparison.
And like, I just said it just based on the name, and then you meet the guy, and he's like,
Chris Noble.
It's totally Chris Noble. Yeah, so, and it's the same. Like, yeah, like, I don't even know if Savage has earned last name, although he is the prototypical Probst will call you by your last name figure.
Andrew Savage could be Ryan Shoulders, and he would be called Savage. His last name is Savage.
It's just, that's just the way it is. You know, I will have to choose from like 15 different songs when he goes away because there's so much Savage I could go for.
You gotta, I mean, you know which one you gotta do though. I think you gotta do Megan Thee Stallion.
It's on the list. I mean, there's a few. Yeah, maybe I'll pull some Savage Dragon out. No.
Do some Savage Garden.
There we go. That's the one. Savage Dragon is a comic book.
I was like, is that some like old song? I don't know. I didn't even think you said it wrong. I just thought it was something I did.
Apparently, this is a thing I do now, is I start with the first term of a music thing, and then I just flow into something wrong. It's my thing. Deal with it.
Oh, if anyone is a podcast-only listener, please go to the website for last week's to watch a nice little bonus video of one of the happiest 2 minutes of my life.
Yeah, except that like it was supposed to be a somber thing or like a respectful thing. And instead,
I mean, I didn't grow up with Van Halen.
I mean, I barely did too. It was, yeah, I'm old enough, sure. But anyway, that's anything else for this week?
No, I'm just so excited to hear what the theme music is going to be.
Then let's play it.
I should laugh, but I cry, because your love has passed me by. You took me by surprise, you didn't realize that I was waiting. Time goes slowly, but it carries on, and now the best have come and gone. You took me by surprise. I didn't.